Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Thank you for joining me. Let's begin today with something that I touched on a couple times in the last week or so, something that I think is relevant, but I want to reiterate based mostly because of this excellent article written by John Whitehead that I want to read an excerpt from. But this idea of the government shutdown that's still going on, that is in a lot of ways distracting people from many other things, but the reality of what will never stop, regardless of how much of the government they shut down. And it's important to think about that, that as we pointed out, the bombings don't stop and then the police state doesn't stop. These things will never stop, showing you where their importance lies in their mind, what they're willing to allow to shut down, the money they're willing to allow to stop from flowing, but never when it comes to the military-industrial complex. Important thing to think about. So to begin, the article coming from John Whitehead, from the Rutherford Institute, entitled "Government Shutdown or Not, the Police State Will Continue to Flourish." And that's something I think we have to continue to think about, but really take a moment to understand what he's trying to say there, what that ultimately means. Now, as this article begins, and I'm going to read you an excerpt from this, because you should read this whole thing for yourself. As I always point out, everything that we talk about, you should take a moment when the show is done and actually dive into these each and take some time to look at them. But he starts with a quote saying, "There is no more dangerous menace to civilization than a government of incompetent, corrupt, or vile men." Ludwig von Mises, I believe. He says, "The government has shut down again. At least parts of the government have temporarily shut down over President Trump's demand for a $5 billion border wall." And as I pointed out in the past couple shows, that's the one thing that they really want to make sure that you're focused on. Just this measly $5 billion, and I say it like that jokingly, and comparing to all the other money that's being spent, hundreds of billions of dollars, they want you to really focus on this one small point. So you don't recognize that we're spending hundreds of billions of dollars on more on many things that we don't need, to save from diving back into yesterday's show, which I recommend you watch. One of them simply being another aircraft carrier, when we already have 9 more than the next closest country and 55 sitting decommissioned. Why we need to spend more money on that is a good question. And why they want us to only focus on $5 billion of this large spending thing is what you should be thinking about. He goes on to say, "Yet while these political games dominate news headlines," and they are games, "send the stock market into a nosedive and put more than 800,000 federal employees at risk of having to work without pay, nothing about this government shutdown will diminish the immediate and very real dangers of the American police state with its roadside strip searches, government surveillance, biometric databases, citizens being treated like terrorists, imprisonments for criticizing the government, national ID cards, SWAT team raids, censorship, forcible blood draws and DNA extractions, private prisons, weaponized drones, red light cameras, tasers, active shooter drills, police misconduct, and government corruption. Shutdown or not, war will also continue. Drone killings will continue. Surveillance will continue. Censorship and persecution of anyone who criticizes the government will continue. The government's efforts to label dissidents as extremists and terrorists will continue. Police shootings will continue. Highway robbery meted out by government officials will continue. Corrupt government will continue. Profit-driven prisons will continue. And the militarization of the police will continue." And he says, "Indeed, take a look at the programs and policies that are not affected by a government shutdown, and you'll get a clearer sense of the government's priorities, which have little to do with serving taxpayers and everything to do with amassing money, power, and control." Now, thinking of that as the starting point for today, consider all of that. And what's really important to the current control structure and the things that they try to distract you with, and where they want the misdirect of it all, using the scapegoat of another country to say, well, anything we do, even if it's illegal, is okay because that group is there, or this entity is there, or the same old justifications they continue to shove down your throat. And many people just nod and go, oh yeah, well, Iran's there, so that then we have to, because they don't know any better. All of this is about the military-industrial complex, the control, the power around all of it. So consider that. Now, moving on to the first story that relates directly to what we talked about yesterday, which is indeed very important. And this is the admission, as I see it, and you'll see why, of Israel not just attacking Syria, which we know based on the evidence at hand is the case, but that they I think almost unwittingly admitted that it was a preemptive attack. This coming from South Front, Israeli official reveals additional details of December 25th airstrikes on Syria. This article actually reporting on a Haaretz article where an official spoke with the Haaretz news organization. And there's some important stuff to take away from this. Now, according to an Israeli military official speaking with Haaretz newspaper this morning, actually, Israel's Christmas attack targeted alleged Iranian storage facilities and anti-aircraft battery of the Syrian Arab Air Defense Forces, or SIAD, the acronym, around the Syrian capital of Damascus. So they're claiming that they attacked Syria, which is rare that they even come out and say anything. But of course, as we pointed out, that they were targeting Iran, which somehow makes it okay, even though it doesn't. Regardless of whether or not Iran's there or not, which is arguable in this case, even in the place they attacked, it still doesn't okay an attack on a sovereign nation. But IDF tweets and many people are pointing out, oh, well, they were attacked first, as they so often claim. First of all, there's no evidence to support that other than their claims. But let's go further. The official also claimed that Israel alerted Russia about the airstrikes ahead of time. Of course, without providing any further information. So whether or not that's even true, I think what they were trying to do there was say, well, we told Russia about it. So somehow to put Russia in a bad spot. But I don't think they took a moment to realize by saying that they admitted that they had planned this ahead of time, that they alerted Russia that they were going to. You don't alert Russia when you've been attacked and you're responding to an attack. They claim that they were simply responding to missiles coming from Syria. But in their claiming, they then stopped, alerted Russia that we're going to be attacking later today in a response to an attack. It's absurd. They're lying somewhere in here, and I don't think it's pretty hard to figure out which one is a lie. But at the end of the day, what they say right here, the Israeli official admitted that they were planning this attack, alerted Russia about it, and then carried it out. That's a unprovoked attack. All of it's illegal regardless, but that flies in the face of many comments we've been getting about how, oh, you don't know anything. They're simply responding, which is what the Israel says every single time. Could it be true? Sure, anything's possible. But all the evidence, including what Israel officials have said themselves, show us that they planned an attack on Syria, as we've been knowing they've been getting ready to do for a long time. Now, Syrian pro-government activists confirmed that an air defense system of the SIADF was hit during the airstrikes. Again, the SIADF is the Syrian Arab Air Defense Forces, was hit during these airstrikes. And this is where it gets even more interesting. It says, however, they said that the storage facilities were of the Syrian Arab Army of the 4th Division. So right there, you may say, okay, well, this happens all the time. Maybe it was Iran, Syria's covering for them. They're just putting out their own propaganda, which they all do. Because remember, Israel says they were focusing on Iran. Syria's saying, no, these were our bases. Now, interestingly enough, when you do your due diligence, even the satellite images released by Israel's ImageSat, their own satellite information, actually confirms that the facilities were located inside the base of that same division. The very division that Syria is saying that was attacked, the 4th Division, which is not an Iranian area. This is a Syrian base. Now, you could argue maybe there were Iranian people there. But now we're getting into some very deep hypothetical guesses to make this the case. The reality is all of the evidence suggests that it was not an Iranian location. But again, anything's possible. But the reality, what I'm always trying to put on to make people think about, is that we have to look at the facts in front of us, the information being presented to us. On one side, as we pointed out before, you have someone saying that Iran was there, trust us. And then you've got the other side giving all kinds of proof and evidence and information and satellite imagery and everything saying, nope, look, this was a Syrian location. Pretty interesting. And in addition, we have Israel accidentally admitting that they planned to attack beforehand. Bright. Now, as I reported yesterday, a spokesman for the Ministry of Defense of Russia said that the Israeli airstrikes on Damascus endangered 2 civilian airplanes. So regardless of all this information, they used civilian airliners full of civilians as a shield, essentially, to block potential attacks on their planes, which in and of itself is despicable. And this forced the SIADF to delay their deployment of their surface-to-air missiles because they didn't want to bring down a civilian plane. Which makes perfect sense. So Israel did this knowingly, which is deceitful and nefarious, but it aligns with things they've done in the past. Now, of course, it's being reported after all of this, which isn't very surprising at all, that now Netanyahu is praising Israel and their air force after this Christmas airstrike on Syria. Now, actually not addressing the specific strike on Christmas, but coming out after the attack and basically saying, you know, how great everything is going and how they're upholding their red lines and so and so. Basically praising them after their attack on Christmas in Syria. Now, on this important note, a comment that I keep getting, frustratingly so, is that, oh, Ryan, didn't you know that Muslims don't celebrate Christmas? Muslims don't care about Christmas. Except the fact these people, as usual, failing to do their due diligence, don't realize that Syria is actually home to one of the largest Christian populations in the Middle East. In fact, about 10%, that's over 1 million people in Syria, celebrate Christmas. Over 1 million people. But these people are so brainwashed by the mainstream media that they can't even take a moment to realize that, yeah, there are Christians in Syria that are celebrating. And guess what? They're only able to celebrate Christmas at this moment because they forced back the Western-backed extremists who very recently it was illegal to do so. The ones that were funded by the U.S., backed by the West. Yeah, those ones that they forced out. Now they're able to celebrate Christmas. Sounds kind of like the opposite of what they're trying to sell you about Assad's regime. Interesting. Now, where are all these, you know, Christian Trump supporters? Why is the U.S. supporting groups like Israel and Saudi Arabia who do not condone Christianity or Christmas? The U.S. is blindly backing them and supporting them in every possible way, yet attacking countries that allow this kind of idea. So you can choose the freedom of religion. These are the groups that the U.S. is attacking. Think about that. Where are all these Christian Trump supporters, or just Christians in general, that support the U.S. government at this moment and their actions? Ask yourself why they are attacking places that have mostly, not mostly, but that have the largest amount of Christians in their area in the Middle East, while allowing the other ones to flourish that do the exact opposite. Now, in case you weren't sure, in case you don't believe that, let's say, there's a great video that just came out by Syrian Analysis entitled Christmas Celebrations in Damascus, which do in fact show us that these people are celebrating Christmas in Damascus. It's just funny to me that people don't recognize that there are Christians a lot of places in the world. And it just so happens that Syria has the largest Christian population in the Middle East. It's nice to see this. It's nice to see them actually celebrating Christmas and you know, flying in the face and only being allowed to do so at this point in time because the Syrian government has taken back their sovereign territory. Just think about that. I mean, this entire look doesn't have the look of the kind of place that the Western media is trying to sell to you as Syria or as any country in the Middle East. This is the opposite of what they're trying to show you. And this is the capital. This is in Damascus. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, while this is playing, because, you know, I'm just going to let it keep going for a minute. Now, the point of this. First of all, what he says in his video, which if you guys are not familiar with Kavor Kalmasian of this channel, Syriana Analysis, I highly recommend you look into it because it is an excellent channel to understand what's really going on in Syria. Now, he says Syrians in the capital of Damascus celebrated their first peaceful Christmas after defeating the Islamist terrorists in the suburbs of the capital, who consider celebrating the birth of Jesus as a sin. He's referring to the Islamist terrorists that were backed by the United States, the West. He says, however, peace didn't last long as, of course, Israel attacked Damascus once again on December 25th. And the Syrian army responded to those hostile objects, destroying 14 out of 16 Israeli missiles. Just interesting to see that, right? To see the difference of what they're trying to shove in your face. But I got tired of responding to one comment after another saying neither of these groups celebrate Christmas, so just calm down. Well, you're wrong. I hope you can see that you're wrong. I hope people can celebrate or can appreciate the fact that there are a lot of Christians in these locations. Kind of interesting how, for instance, such as like Iraq before Saddam Hussein was taken out of power, supported a lot of Christianity. His entire Ba'ath Party was Christian. except the fact that now it's completely dominated by Islamic terrorists. Same kind of like how Libya turned out too. How funny is that? How interesting. How Libya is now dominated by more extremists than it ever was before after the U.S. liberation. Interesting how that works out. Well, just so you know, Christmas was being celebrated in Damascus when Israel decided to attack them unilaterally, or rather just unprovoked. On that same note, the next article coming from Zero Hedge, this one entitled, Russia slams Israel for gross violation of sovereignty during latest Syria airstrike. Now, this is Russia responding, and rightly so, to what was indeed a violation of sovereignty. But apparently this doesn't seem to matter as long as you're Israel or Saudi Arabia. These things don't apply to you. Because John Bolton will get up and scream to the ICC and say, don't you dare investigate our allies because we're the good guys, apparently. And I guess that just trumps everything. No pun intended. Now, following reports that Israel is plotting a full-scale offensive in Syria, which is indeed something that seems to be on the horizon, after years of carrying out airstrikes on alleged Iranian or Iranian-affiliated targets in Damascus, or as I just previously reported, Russia on Wednesday accused Israel of endangering the lives of civilians during a Christmas Day bombing as they carried out raids with their F-16s flying out of Lebanon. Now, Russia accused the Israelis of violating Syrian sovereignty and threatening two civilian flights. They said, quote, we are very concerned by the attacks and how they were made. This is a gross violation of the sovereignty of Syria. This is according to the Russian ministry. And he said the provocative actions of the Israeli Air Force directly threatened two airliners. Now, you know, and this is stuff that's going, this is for everyone to see. This is yet to be discussed, as far as I can tell, by the majority of the mainstream media. And if so, it's like the BBC had an article where it was just quickly throwing it off into like, basically following the line of what the Israelis would say. Ignoring all the other evidence from the airliners they threatened to the fact that they admitted after the fact that they planned it and told Russia. Nothing. Now, Syrian state media claimed it intercepted most of the Israeli missiles. Israel, for what it's worth, has denied that it planned the attack, even though an official has basically told Haaretz that they notified Russia ahead of time, saying that its fighter jets were merely protecting themselves from anti-aircraft gunfire. Again, directly contradicting what their official just told Haaretz. It says, quote, an Israeli aerial defense system activated in response to an anti-aircraft missile launched from Syria. Interesting how it directly contradicts. Now, this statement was given before today. As we know today, they admitted that they basically told Russia. Now, we should expect more Israeli attacks coming. This is going to intensify. Not only because Israel has openly said they're going to intensify, but because the U.S. has said that they support them. They've told them point blank, don't worry, we're going to continue to do what we're doing in Syria, regardless of whether we even end up taking these 2,000 troops out, which, mind you, has not happened yet. It's interesting to see how quickly people forget, and we'll see if it does. It may actually happen, but it would not surprise me if they simply waited a week or two before people just forget, and they just wouldn't play. Did not happen? Maybe not. People just forget about it. It's astounding to me. Now, in a related story coming from the anti-media, this one is it relates to Turkey, you know, the other group that's going to be maintaining the U.S. occupation of Syria, regardless of whether U.S. stays with their token 2,000 troops. This is entitled Turkish-backed fighters preparing to replace U.S. forces in Syria. Now, this is about coordination. This is the important part to me, because this is what I've been worried about. We're now getting reports from anti-war that they're discussing open coordination, not just because of NATO allies, not just because of the Kurds, but literally coordinating their moves to not lose any ground. This is the real point. As I see it, in my opinion, this all comes down to maintaining the NATO occupation of Syria. And they're going to make sure that Turkey does that. So they're taking their time. They're going to coordinate this with the U.S. and Turkey to make sure that the occupation continues. The destabilization continues, just like many have slipped up and admitted was the plan from the beginning. Now, according to antiwar.com, which is another great site, Turkey-backed rebel fighters in Syria, many will call them moderate rebels, however you want to look at it, they're the extremists in there that are fighting against Syria. And even if they're not extremist in your eyes, they're currently illegally occupying a sovereign nation. So they're in the wrong, no matter what they're doing. Now, they're gearing up for a major deployment in northeastern Syria, as we've all been expecting, with an eye on replacing the U.S. troops in this area. This is basically what I've been warning about. Now, Turkey is planning to invade in the course of this replacement and is coordinating, according to anti-war, with the U.S. and the pullout and the deployment. So literally coordinating so they don't lose ground is what this is being reported as. Now, this is exactly what I was concerned about from the beginning. And I've said this multiple times. Switching out one NATO occupier for another. And this, by this account, in a coordinated fashion, almost as if, you know, this whole thing were planned. Seeing that the U.S. is losing its momentum here and people are starting to wake up and say, why the hell are we occupying Syria? So they're just going to cut their losses. But guess what? They're not going to lose their agenda. They're going to basically say, well, we'll pull out, you get in, we'll make sure that they're there. Now, this is all my opinion based on what we're looking at, but it's hard to see it any other way. Now, President Trump has said the withdrawal will be slow and there has been no public timetable on the troop movements. So to avoid restricting themselves with the having to meet a certain deadline. Now, it's clear that that Turkey wants to go after the Kurds, or at least that's what they're putting forward. But I think there's much more going on here than just that. We should also consider the real possibility here that U.S. troops won't even end up leaving in full. And this will be basically an increase in occupation under a long guise of withdrawal, which doesn't happen. So we'll have to wait and see, because that seems like a real possibility here. Now, the Turkish foreign minister addressed the situation in comments to reporters on Tuesday, saying that while the timeline of deployment is related to coordination with the U.S., which is point blank, Turkey remains determined to expel the Kurds from Syria's northeast. Now, people would say, well, the coordination is so they don't attack each other. And again, this is the same thing I said before. The discussion is all about avoiding how NATO members might actually attack each other and ignoring the fact that they're both illegally occupying a country. This whole thing is designed to sidestep the conversation to another thing instead of what it really should be about, the flagrant violation of international law. Now, Kurdish officials say that they're repositioning their own forces in a plan to defend the area from the invading Turkish and allied forces. So the Kurds are clearly stuck in the middle here, as they've been before. The U.S. seems to use them like the little chess piece, another pawn they can just sacrifice. Now, the likelihood is that this will begin after the Manbij invasion, as few Kurds were believed to have remained in that city. Now, however, again, and I've been pointing this out since Turkey first illegally moved into Syria, the one thing few are discussing in favor of the Kurds versus Turks talking points, or just a worry of NATO allies attacking, but this is what it's now become, this Kurds and Turks and what's going to happen between them, is that Turkey is illegally occupying Syria. Why is this acceptable? Why is it okay for NATO allies to tag in, tag out, and switch in, and now Turkey's going to occupy Syria? Why has this become okay? See, it's because they cast Syria as just this blanket villain. Well, if it's in Syria, then that's okay, but it's not okay. And most of the world agrees with that. It's important that people speak up, raise their voices, and say, why is Turkey or the U.S. illegally occupying a country? Just saying Iran or the Kurds is not enough. Again, just as the U.S. uses Iran as its catch-all excuse for violating international law, Turkey is using the Kurds as their excuse. Even if the Kurds were their true goal here, which I doubt, I'm sure it's part of it, but even if it was their ultimate goal, there are proper ways to go about such actions. Ways that would not, you know, that are forced on anyone that's not aligned with the U.S. You know, the proper channels. Now, just imagine if Assad said, oh, you know, there are Muslim extremists in New York, so I have to go and invade the U.S. to protect Syrian national security. Now, you may be thinking, how stupid is that? Well, take a moment and realize it's literally the exact same thing the U.S. is saying to Syria. Well, you've got extremists in Syria, so we have to invade your country and occupy it to protect our national security. Literally the exact same thing in reverse. Why is it okay? If it's simply because Assad's evil and Syria's the bad guy, you need to start reflecting on your decision-making process. Because that's wildly naive to think that this, we're good, they're bad, so everything else makes sense. It's absolutely unbelievable, and hopefully I'm waking some people up to the truth here. So for the final story of the day, this one coming from Mint Press News, excellent article entitled, Washington just injected serious cash and weapons into Ukraine's far-right regime. So more funding of extremists all over the world. Yeah, we're going to pull out a couple thousand people from one location as if that ends the entirety of U.S. interventionism around the world. Now, guess what? It doesn't. All the same stuff is going on. But they want you to get tricked by those little plays that they do. Now, this article begins with saying, oh, what a lovely big stocking filler for the Kiev regime this week from Washington. Just in time for Christmas, too. And only weeks after President Petro Poroshenko tried to incite a war with Russia from a naval provocation in the Kerch Strait. So first, we had U.S. government envoy Kurt Volker announcing this week that an additional $250 million in military weapons were being packaged in Congress for Ukraine, meaning your tax dollars going to support this group, which amounts to essentially a green light from Washington to the Kiev regime to continue its flagrant provocations. Basically saying, you know, here's money, so we're in agreement with everything you're trying to do. Keep going. A neo-Nazi regime, your tax dollars are paying for this. Yet another thing to add to a long list of things you should be up happy about with what's going on in this country. Now then, the D.C.-based international lending institutions, the IMF and World Bank, signed off on, guess what, a $4 billion loan for Poroshenko's regime. Legitimizing this entirely illegitimate, forced in from a U.S.-backed coup, neo-Nazi regime. Unbelievable. Now, the apparent investor confidence bestowed by the Washington-based development agencies, the confidence given when the IMF gives them $4 billion, will boost the incumbent president's reelection prospects in the forthcoming ballot on March. Now, up until recently, and we've talked about this, Poroshenko was trailing in opinion polls and looked set for a defeat in the election. Many think this is largely one of the reasons why he carried out the incident in the Kerch Strait to be able to initiate martial law, which didn't go the way he wanted. He wanted basically indefinite to up to his decision in everywhere, but he got certain locations for a limited time. But the point was that he could basically just prolong the election and just put it off. Now, how convenient that the IMF and the World Bank, under the control of the United States government, should step up to the plate with a very big helping hand here. And that's not seen as interference in country sovereign affairs? I guess not. I guess it only matters when Russia is pointed to. They're the ones, even though you can't prove it, just say they did it, and that's the big deal. But when a U.S. and any other country does it right in front of us, nah, that's different, because we're the good guys, I guess. Unbelievable to see this. So they're literally giving them $4 billion to a verifiable neo-Nazi regime. And this likely may help Poroshenko get reelected. Now, since the CIA-backed coup in Kiev in February 2014, against the elected government of Viktor Yanukovych, it is estimated that the U.S. has provided the cabal that seized power with up to $1 billion in military aid. Again, your tax dollars. $1 billion. Think about what that could go to. You know, any number of things we've talked about on this show. Now, it doesn't seem to bother American lawmakers that the Kiev regime is dominated by neo-Nazi demagogues and paramilitaries who worship, I think it's Stepan Bandera, and other Ukrainian collaborators in the Third Reich's final solution. Now, this is not hyperbole here, people. This is the concept that we're, the idea here is that these groups are the very kind of extremists, the very kind of groups that they pretend to be fighting everywhere else. And here is an image that I think is important that you see that shows, I was just finding it right there, I realized I forgot it, that shows the exact kind of emblem that aligns with the Reich, Nazis. Just recently, Poroshenko took this picture, inspecting the Ukrainian special forces, some of whom were donning this insignia that you can see. This is the Third Reich's SS. This is not a secret, people. That's what's interesting, is this stuff has been talked about, pointed out, admitted to, pictures of them giving the Sieg Heil attention signal. I mean, these people are neo-Nazis. The U.S. is directly backing them. They're the ones that put them in place. The contradictions are bewildering, that people can't notice the absurdity of this happening overseas, literally supporting a neo-Nazi regime while half the country is saying Donald Trump's a Nazi. It's ridiculous to me that people can't see this kind of thing. But hopefully we're going to wake some people up. But anyway, so the article continues. As Russian President Vladimir Putin pointed out in his annual press conference this week, the Kiev regime has been waging a war and a blockade against its own Ukrainian citizens in the eastern Donbass for years, for over 4 years, in which civilians continue to be killed on a daily basis. Well, this is a fact, regardless of who said it. This is indeed a verifiable fact. Now, why is nobody talking about that? Why is the media not appalled at how the civilians are dying? As they point out, one reason why the war remains largely unknown in the West is that the Western news media doesn't report on it. Or when they do, they distort it with lies that Russia has invaded Ukraine. This is similar to how the Western news media largely forgot to report on the war in Yemen. And when they've even bothered to mention Yemen at all, they again distort it by calling it a proxy war with Iran, ignoring all of the horrible things the U.S. has paid for and done in Yemen themselves. Now, just as President Donald Trump announces this week that he's pulling out American troops from Syria, the illegally present there for the past 4 years, which, again, important to always remember, they're illegally there right now, the same administration is stepping up its military involvement in the Ukraine, trading off one regime supporting for another, in this case, the militants they're supporting on the ground. $250 million of your taxpayer dollar, of your money. Now, with all of this, one grave legal question arises. It's understood that the Bretton Woods institutions of the IMF, the World Bank, officially affiliated with the United Nations, are actually forbidden from lending money to states which are in the midst of armed conflict. So how is it then possible that these institutions are bankrolling the Kiev regime, given the latter's horrendous assault on its own people in eastern Ukraine, its explicit affiliation with neo-Nazi ideology, and its brazen attempts to provoke a war with Russia? It's a pretty damn good question. Funny how these things only seem to apply to enemies of the United States. Now, of course, the article finishes by saying, the U.S. government and its Washington financial institutions are ensuring that the cabal remains in power with their generous rewards of military and capital injections. More disturbing is that the Kiev regime will feel emboldened to take its warmongering against Russia to an even more reckless level. Because I would argue that's exactly what they want them to do. But as always, do the research, come to your own conclusions. Seems pretty damn clear, based on all the information we presented thus far, that this has been planned. Like we've continued to talk about the joint statement from the Ukraine with the United States that very clearly outlined the desire to create the conditions that justify action against Russia. And then 3 days later, we had the Kerch Strait incident. Big shock. Clearly, this was planned. I mean, it's obvious. But I really want people to not just take my word for it. I want you to go out and do your research and recognize that the people who are currently taking control of this country have no concern for what's best for you or for anybody else watching the show that doesn't live in the United States. But recognize that myself as an American and many, many others, I would argue the majority, see it. And we want your help in stopping this and letting people see that we're no longer represented by the people that are supposedly the leadership of this country. Thank you for tuning in today. I hope this resonates with some people. And if it does, if this resonates with you, please share it. Spread it out there. Wake people up to the reality that's going on around you. And not just because of the things that I think and what I say, but because I'm giving you the tools and the information to do the research for yourself. Empower yourself and think for yourself. That's what really matters. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.